Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. As North Carolinians prepare to vote in the 2022 midterm elections, one of the top issues on the minds of voters is public education. On the one hand, there is the long-standing battle over school funding, and perhaps most notably, the stubborn resistance of Republican legislative leaders to comply with court orders to adequately fund the state's public schools. On the other, there are the persistent conservative attacks on teachers and how schools are run, or at least how some on the right perceive them to be run, with battles over book banning and how American history is taught often taking the stage. Recently, in order to help make sense of where things stand and what's needed in our schools, I caught up with a veteran state lawmaker who spent years working to improve them, Guilford County State Senator Gladys Robinson. Well, Senator Gladys Robinson, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being back with us.
Well, good morning. It's my pleasure to be with you.
So there's so many things I'd like to ask you about today, but let's start with education. You've obviously served on education committees at the General Assembly for a long time. We've got some new reports that show some pretty disturbing news about student test scores maybe have improved a little bit, but a third of our schools in the state are still now labeled as low performing. What do you see as sort of the roadblocks to addressing these issues in our state right now?
Well, Rob, I think it's one of the most serious issues we have to address. Not only have I served on the Education Committee, but served on the Board of Governors for 10 years, and I was involved locally. So it is a serious issue. And, you know, I think that we keep missing out on what we already know works. We know that early childhood development is one of the most critical pieces we can do. When we traveled to Finland as a bipartisan coalition years ago, I think 2012, we saw what they were doing with early childhood education with parents, working with parents, working with the children. Children have to have a good beginning. And yet we have early childhood development centers here, but we don't have teachers because we don't pay a decent wage to recruit those teachers. And these teachers have four-year degrees, most of them. But also we could have them out of the community college, but we've got to recruit and pay them at that level in order for the children to begin school ready to learn. So I think that's one of the primary issues. And we can talk about, you know, I have a lot of ideas, so we can talk about all of the others.
Probably a lot of pent up ideas. I know a lot of good ideas have kind of been tamped down over recent years as we sort of gone in this direction. Oh, the free market will solve all of our education problems. It seems like that's been sort of the mantra.
Yeah, you know, will not.
So the pandemic has obviously had a big impact on our kids, and it's going to take some time to recoup the losses that we've had. But even before that, we know a lot of our kids were struggling, particularly kids of color in our public school systems. In many instances, we're still being left behind. Those issues haven't gone away. I know you're not in the majority at the General Assembly right now, but if you were, what would be some of the specific things in addition to early childhood education that you might be prioritizing right now as we try to regain these losses?
Well, certainly. And I remind people I was on that first Closing the Achievement Gap Commission way before I ever came to the General Assembly. And we had some of the same issues. So we don't need to continue to study it. We need to do the work. And part of that work is we've seen a lot of models. We know that excellent leadership at the school level makes a tremendous difference. And we saw that with the principal at Shuford Elementary, who recently shared a report with us at an oversight meeting where she has collaborated with her team, focused in on the children with a blended learning approach, looked at the needs of every child, and they were way below performance. But when they got together as a team and looked at what was needed, where those children were, develop a plan, a pathway for each of those children, their performance flipped in a year. But now it took a lot because those teachers gave probably 60 hours a week or so of their time. You know, we aren't paying for that, you know, but they gave their time. They had to go to staff development with NCAT, and they worked throughout the summer in terms of developing those plans. So we allow our teachers to have to get jobs during the summer to supplement their salaries, as opposed to paying for their staff development in the summer. So they have the time to plan and get ready to execute when the year comes in. But she's done a fantastic job. My concern is, and hers was, they don't really have the time to do it during the school year. And then what happens as the children move to each level? What happens? How does that learning continue? Fourth and fifth grade, they're going to middle school. How is that going to continue unless the next school has the same approach, has an excellent principal, has a team that's willing to collaborate, to look at culture, to look at all of the issues? Because we're dealing with a much more diverse culture than before. And so we've got to take a different kind of approach in terms of how do we teach? How do we involve parents to really make sure the children are learning? So it's going to take all of us. And we keep saying that, but we aren't using it. We aren't using it.
We have these stories of extraordinary principles and extraordinary effort. Sure. But the challenge is, how do you replicate that? How do you make that, you know, across on such a massive scale with where we have hundreds of thousands of students in need? Sure. And it seems like it's hard to get away from the fact that funding is a big part of that. You know, right now we see our enrollment in our schools of education has been declining, and people have kind of been spooked away from the teaching profession. They hear about low pay. They hear about stressful jobs. They hear about being attacked by angry parents. And it seems like that's going to take a real effort just to rebuild sort of the desire to be teachers and to want to stay in the profession.
Yes. And I agree, Rob, but you know, it has to start from the top. Mm-hmm. We as a General Assembly have set a real bad standard. We don't appreciate, and when I say we, I don't mean me. I mean the General Assembly does not appreciate teachers, does not appreciate the fact that teaching is a profession. And if a teacher impacts the lives of all of these children, impacted our lives, and have children probably the majority of the day, then we ought to value that as a great profession and pay it at the professional level, but also value it, not talk down to it, not, you know, slander the teachers that I hear in the General Assembly, but value them, listen to them, and talk about how can we do this better together. And that has not been done. And that's what the college students are hearing. They're saying, we don't want to go into a profession and have to fight our way straight through, never get paid. They'd rather go to a corporate job and know that there is some opportunity for advancement and appreciation. So the top has to start in terms of our philosophy, how we think, how we approach, and let our teachers and let our students see that. And then not only pay, but help in terms of staff development. Recruitment. We're doing a few things in the state now in terms of recruitment for diversity, but it's not enough. You know, the General Assembly has stored away a lot of money as opposed to putting it in education. You would just put it in the general fund and save it. Well, while we're saving it, our students continue to fail. And we are not making progress in the state. So a few years from now, you and I'll be talking, maybe you, about the same problem, and we'll be worse off because our leadership is not paying attention.
We're talking with Senator Gladys Robinson of Guilford County, who served in the General Assembly for, gosh, is it six terms now in the state Senate?
Yes, it is.
One important politician, though, who has been speaking the language of changing how we approach the teaching profession, intentionally approaching the issue of bringing greater diversity to our public education workforce, is Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona. He was in Guilford County with Dr. Joe Biden, the First Lady. And that seemed to be a sort of encouraging development, that we were hearing sort of a change of tenor coming from the administration in Washington, where the previous administration had been very anti-public education. There was some hopeful language being espoused at that event that you attended, as I understand it, in Greensboro.
Yes, I did. I attended and met both of them, and I am very pleased with their philosophies, their intentional approaches to, because it's not just happening in North Carolina, it's happening across the country, that the same group of children are continually failing, and it's a long way to catch up. And people forget that the majority of our country is becoming people of color.
Right.
And if these children are failing, our country fails. Our state fails. So I really appreciated the First Lady's talking points and the Secretary as well. But we have to make sure we're using it in North Carolina. You know, they can say it at the national level.
Right.
But if we don't do it in North Carolina, then we as a state will fail. And we won't have students ready to go into all of these corporate companies we are recruiting now. Mm-hmm. You know, we are really doing well in terms of recruiting corporate partners and increasing. Really, people want to come to the state, but they aren't going to come if our educational system is failing. And Rob, one thing that bothers me is that I think my Republican colleagues would rather pump money into vouchers and private education as opposed to improve our public education system. It really bothers me.
Well, that's still where the vast majority of our children will be in school, and we hope they will remain there in our public education system.
Yes.
I know we've talked with State Board of Education member James Ford about how important it is to have teachers of color in our classroom, and how just having one teacher of color can often make the difference in transforming a child's life. And I trust you share this viewpoint, and that this is a pipeline that we've just got to continue to work to increase the volume of.
Yes, I definitely share that. And I say that we have to, as the First Lady said, find ways of recruiting and incentivizing to make sure, because college students of color have a lot of opportunities. It's not like it was 40 years ago when you went into teaching or tried to go to medical school or lawyer. They have a whole lot of opportunities now. So it's got to be an incentive to go into education, to know that you're going to be valued and respected as well, and get them in our classrooms. I think it's so very important. Students need to see people who look like them, who understand their culture, and who can work with them. We really don't have very many Black males or males of other ethnic diversities in our schools. So we really need to make a great effort. When college students are coming out, they're getting married and having families, they need to be able to support their families. They aren't going to come to work for us for $35,000 or $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
They need $55,000 or $60,000 to start off with. And we can do it in this state. We can do it. There's no reason we should not pay the national average for teaching salaries.
Yeah, I saw a study recently that showed that Alabama, of all states, has sort of soared past North Carolina in terms of what it's paying its beginning, all of its educators.
Yes.
And one solution, apparently one vehicle perhaps for providing a solution here as we get to the end of our time with Senator Gladys Robinson is the Leandro case. It's hard to believe that case now been around for 27, 28 years. But it's before our Supreme Court once again, where the Supreme Court's going to decide whether, in fact, the General Assembly can be required to comply with the Constitution or whether the court is powerless to order that. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that case and what kind of a difference perhaps it might make in addressing these education challenges we've been discussing.
Well, I certainly do. Like I said, I was around when Judge Manning issued the first order in terms of what we should be doing to close the achievement gap. So I'm really hoping that the courts take the high road and determine that since we as a General Assembly have not done our job, that they have an obligation to make sure that funding, full funding, is there for making sure our children are able to learn. And it's not just salaries. People keep thinking, well, just teacher salaries. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's support systems. We're dealing with diverse populations that have a lot of issues, especially after COVID and prior to, in terms of nurses, counselors, social workers, materials, staff development. There are a lot of pieces that go into making sure that children who come to school with many kinds of barriers are able to get to where they need to and begin to learn. One of the other things I wanted to mention, Rob, before I get off is I think our schools have an opportunity, wherever they are, to include their faith communities. I mentioned to Guilford County in terms of the learning loss. Engage the churches here, engage the faith communities. They have retired teachers who are willing to offer tutorial services, but we are not being global in our thinking for some reason. We can't do it alone. And we have people in communities who will help because they care about the children.
Yeah, I'm aware actually of a very successful tutoring program at a church here in Wake County that has done after-school tutoring for years with kids in need, and it's been very successful. We're coming to the end of our time with Senator Gladys Robinson. We've been talking about education, but before I let you go, I have to ask you one more time about Medicaid expansion. We keep hearing rumors, maybe there's a deal, maybe possibly North Carolina. It seems inevitable that it's going to happen at some point, that North Carolina will finally join the overwhelming majority of states and expand Medicaid. But I don't know. Any thoughts about when it might conceivably happen? Or
we finally got it through the Senate, and I've been working on that for 10 years. And now we're dealing with the House and their version of it. So it's still a battle between the two leaders, Berger and Moore, in terms of what's going to happen. But the hospital associations come up with its own ideas about it. And so maybe that'll be a driving force to make sure we approve it sometime in October is what I'm told, that we'll probably go back in October. But we need to get it done because the roles continue to grow. I heard the other night at a meeting about the folks who don't have health care and how detrimental that is. So hopefully let's get it done. You push it, I'll push it, and let's get it done before year end.
All right. Our fingers crossed. Thank you for your service on this issue.
Thank you.
The education issue, so many others. Please take care. Stay healthy. And good luck with these mini sessions that will be happening in the weeks and months ahead. And we'll talk again real soon.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Coming up next, a veteran political observer shares his takes on North Carolina's nip and tuck U.S. Senate race. Stay with us.